Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Infinity Repertory Theater's Modcast. Today I'm your host, Mickey Melillo. Tomorrow, I'll be your host, Mickey Melillo. Today is Thursday, July 19th, 2012. Today I'm sitting here with the gentleman who, I can't even say what character you play because there's so many, but Mr. Joe Coppola. Joe, thank you for joining me.
Oh, no problem.
So, let's get started. First thing, Mod. You are not an Infinity member, but you were cast in this show, and you were a guest artist with Infinity. How does that make you feel?
Oh, it's wonderful. I like the term guest artist.
And you are playing what we commonly, or what you refer to as the everyman, what we've referred to as the multi-character role. Tell me what it's like and what it's been like for you to play these myriad of actors.
It's been a lot of ups and downs. When I first started, I had a lot of trouble trying to differentiate all my characters and make them all fully developed characters, make them all more than just Joe in a nun's outfit. But I think as time has passed and as Paul's given me notes and as I've developed as an actor in the role, I think it's gone a lot better.
Okay, can you name every single person that you play in the show?
I can try. Melanie. Sister Ed, Mr. K, Man, Al the Sound Engineer.
So I think you're down to five. You were at seven, you're now at five.
That's so
sad. But still you're playing five characters throughout the show. Out of the five.
Wooler, six.
Oh, we forgot Mr. Wooler. Out of the six, who is your favorite character?
Mr. K.
Mr. K. Tell me why Mr. K is your favorite character.
Lucas Krycek is one crazed up Fruit Loop. I couldn't even tell you where he's from.
And you're the one giving him the accent.
He's just a lot of fun to play. He's crazy and he's out there and he's got the voice and the movements and he's very touchy-feely. It's just a lot of fun to do.
Okay. In our first modcast, I had asked each one of the actors to give one-word descriptions of their characters. I asked you to give Sister Ed, and you said misunderstood. I want you to elaborate on why you think Sister Ed is misunderstood.
The beautiful woman that is Sister Edwina did not plan on becoming a nun, is the bottom line. She started life much like the kids in Mod. She wanted to go out there and enjoy the world. It just didn't work out. So now she's bitter, she's a little bit jealous, and everyone takes it as her just being like a mean person, and she's really not.
You just pulled that out of thin air, didn't you?
Maybe.
Joe and I have worked together for a couple of years now. We are very, very good friends. We became very good friends through a few shows that we've been in. So the joking around between us is just actually our normal day-to-day. Let's talk about your process with Mod. You've mentioned before when you talk about your character's development, that there were many ups and downs. Tell me about the whole process of Mod in general, between the rehearsals, the time commitment, because it's not just that we started a couple of weeks ago and we're rehearsing every day and we open on Saturday. We've been at this for 5 months now.
Oh, God, we open on Saturday.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I tell you something you didn't already know? But tell me about your process. Tell me how you felt throughout the whole thing. And if there's anything you've learned or any challenges that you've had to overcome that you did or did not overcome yet?
Well, when I first auditioned, I auditioned for the part of Jackson. I did not want to be everyman. And when the cast list first came out and I was told that I was going to be everyman, I'm not going to lie, I wasn't the most thrilled. So I think a big roadblock for me was getting over the distaste I had for the role. Mm-hmm. And because I was a little bit reluctant to enjoy myself, my character suffered and my performances suffered. But now that I've become more comfortable with it, being more comfortable with the role and the characters and the show in general, I feel like my entire performance has become a lot better, or at least I hope so.
Well, I can tell you for a fact that you've actually come a long way. You and I, before the workshop production, you and I had a 3-hour, what I like to call, a character boot camp.
Word.
And we sat down and for 3 hours, you know, I helped you with your character work because that's always been my main forte when I'm on stage. Matter of fact, as if everybody doesn't know already, I'm your understudy for the show. I saw it Paul saw it, we all saw it, and we all thought maybe you just need a little bit of one-on-one time. And that's why I pulled you into what I like to call the character boot camp. Tell us some more about any challenges throughout the whole process and everything. I mean, you said that you were reluctant with the multi-character, but it grew on you. How about anything else?
It was also a little bit of a challenge, and I'm sure Tom had similar things to say. Being a non-Infinity member in an Infinity show is a little bit of an adjustment. I mean, obviously, I've worked with the entire cast before. We're all very close friends. But the level of unity, almost, I don't really know the word, the level of
camaraderie
between the Infinity members is beyond anything that I could have immediately jumped into and been a full part of. Now that Mod has taken off and we've been having rehearsals every day, I feel like it's a lot easier to bond with everyone and get everyone comfortable with each other to the level that we need to be.
Okay. So you feel like that you're more a part of Infinity than an outsider in one of their casts now?
At this point, yes.
Okay. All right, let's pause on Mod for a second. Let's talk about a few other things. Let's talk about, I don't know, let's talk about you're going into senior year.
I am.
At Somers High School. I just had a great article in your local paper, the Somers Record.
Yes.
Just had a great article that I just read today with you and the other Somers, Jesse Shaw, Catherine Saracino, and Tom Oliverio. This past year, you played a role at Once Upon a Mattress as King Sextimus. And for those who don't know the role of King Sextimus, he is a mute. And if you know Joe Coppola, like I know Joe Coppola, there is one thing he is not, and quiet, it's not one of those things. Tell us about what it's like to actually not have a spoken word for 98% of the show, because you do have like a little thing at the end that you do speak when you tell the queen off. Tell us about it.
That was actually one of the most fun roles I've ever played. Again, when I was cast, I wasn't as happy about it as maybe I could have been. But again, through the rehearsal process, I became really, really close with my castmates, Paula Chang and Matteo Blardo. We were the three musketeers. We were together all the time working dances and working scenes.
And Paula and Matteo played which roles?
Paula played the jester and Matteo played the minstrel.
And you three were almost always together on stage, correct?
Yes.
You were three musketeers.
So, working with them and working through my pantomime lines with my director and with friends and putting together the whole physicality of it, because I couldn't use my voice, I had to be big and out there and obnoxious, and it was so much fun to be able to get on that stage and literally go insane for an hour and a half.
The wonderful thing about that show is I went there, I saw a few people that I knew in the cast that were, have been in cast here at our theater. You know, Catherine Saracino played Winifred, the leading lady, and went to go see her for her senior production and everything, and I hadn't seen the show in about 12 years, and when I got there, I was pleasantly surprised on how it was, but what stole the show was honestly you three. You guys really did. You did a great job, and I knew from the get-go you weren't happy about it, because you and I talked about it, that you weren't happy, but you came out with that role. And do you see a little trend that's going here, though? You're not happy about the role, but then you learn to love it.
That happens to me a lot.
But you've been great. You've been absolutely great in almost everything I've seen. You've been in Rent, where you had to step up to play Benny.
It's another theme.
You were in Xanadu, where you were ensemble, and you stepped up to play
Terpsichore!
We'll get into that story in a little bit. You were in, what drama were you in this fall at Somers?
It was called Northwood's Nonsense.
Northwood's Nonsense. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, every fall at Somers, we have a straight play, and then in the spring, we have our musical. The straight play is directed by Julianne Walker, who's one of the English teachers. And I'm much more involved in the drama production than I am at the musical, just because I feel like acting's more my forte as opposed to singing or dancing.
Okay.
Actually, this coming fall, because Miss Walker had a baby, I am student directing the Somers fall production of Once Upon High School.
Oh, really? Well, there you go, folks. There's something to look forward to in October-November timeframe.
It's going to be so good.
Joe Coppola's directorial debut at Somers High School. I may have to buy tickets to that now.
You do.
Oh, now I do. This past summer, not this summer of 2012, but in summer of 2011, you and I got to work side by side together in two different venues. The first was the summer camp, where you were the counselor, and I wound up being the improv teacher, kind of like what Emma is this year with Catherine. And we had such a blast for those. What did I have you? 1 or 2 weeks?
I was only there for 1 week.
You were only there for 1 week. For this 1 week, this guy would come in with his Jimmy Neutron hair, with his little triangle.
Which I want to do again, but I have to keep my hair long for the show.
He's Jimmy Neutron hair. We had 20-some-odd kids, and we had to try to keep them entertained from the hours of 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And he and I did improv, and I didn't realize how good of an improver Joe Coppola was until I got to work side by side with him. And it was almost like, in certain instances, he and I knew exactly what we were thinking. We'd come out with the funniest stuff. The kids would laugh. And even when the kids were being rambunctious, one of the things that I do is I sit down and just start playing with my phone. The first time I did it, didn't tell Joe about it whatsoever. He sat down right next to me and started looking at my phone. And it was, I really did not believe how much we clicked and how much we worked very well together in that summer. The other thing we worked on last summer was The Breakfast Club, which was, I talked to Tom about it in his modcast, was a fantastic show. It was, I told him, and I'll tell you, it was an honor when you guys asked me to play the principal. You played the role that was made famous by Anthony Michael Hall, which was commonly known as the geek in it. Brian, tell us about you playing a role like that that was portrayed 30 years before by an actor that's been very famous. Go ahead. Somebody who was a Brat Packer, as he was referred to in the 80s.
That role is, to this day, my proudest work. I'm so happy with that entire show. It's by far the best production I've ever been in. Brian was a challenge that I happily overcame.
But tell me about, why do you say that he was a challenge?
In the past, I've always been cast as a comedic relief role, as I am in mod. But Brian was one of the few times where I got to take a step back from that and have a serious moment, have an actual dramatic acting moment.
You had a lot of dramatic acting moments in that show, as well as, for a drama in itself, you were the comic relief, so I really think you were cast perfectly as that role. You have, like, and it's not the fact that you were saying jokes, it was that the character were the butt of the jokes from usually Bender or Claire would be the ones that would...
Which is so funny, because when Tom did a production of Breakfast Club, he played Brian.
Really?
Yeah. So then when he was Bender, it was... I felt like it was really good that he was making the jokes, because he was on the other side of it, too. So he knew how to deliver it so that Brian would feel the sting the most. It was good. It was good.
I, like you, are cast in the dramatic... I'm sorry, the comedic roles. So playing the role of Vernon was something totally... I told Tom, the pinnacle bad guy of the 80s. It was a total reversal of what I've done. And I just loved it. I really loved it. Playing a part from a movie that I watched growing up, and then being able to play the role that everybody remembers, and actually being able to say the line, "Don't mess with the bull or you get the horns." That to me was just like, ah. My sister was so upset she couldn't come see it. Yeah, there you go. He's putting up the horns, ladies and gentlemen. So it was a great show. Is there any other memorable roles? Now, I've only known you for 2 years, and you've been acting a lot longer. Tell me some other plays that you've been in and some roles that you've actually enjoyed doing.
My first role ever, I was about 7, going to Summer Trails Camp, and I was Vince Fontaine in our production of Grease.
Wow.
That was a lot of fun.
So did you, Vince Fontaine, he actually sings Hand Jive in
it, yes, right? But not in the version we did.
Oh, okay. All right, well, that's unfortunate. Let's, some other roles. Give, like I said, I only know you from Rent a year and a half ago, really. So it's not like I know I have a full history like I do with some of the other kids in the program. Tell me about some of the stuff you did before you joined the cast of Rent.
Well, in eighth grade, I joined Rent when I was in my sophomore year. In eighth grade, I was Genie in my school's production of Aladdin.
Okay.
Which was my first real acting role. So much fun. Friend Like Me is still my go-to shower song. and then I hit high school. In my freshman year, we did Anything Goes. I was cast as Elijah Whitney.
Okay.
Sophomore year is when I did my first show here with these kids.
Kids.
it's so weird being one of the older cast members.
Now you know how I feel. yeah, because you are actually a year or two older than a majority of the cast, other than
Tom and Catherine.
Tom and Catherine and myself, you're the eldest. So it feels a little odd going from an underclassman to next year you will be the same thing in high school.
I'm so excited. Senior year.
So at the going back to Mod for a second, at the beginning of in May, we did our workshop production. And we had a few little medical issues.
Oh, poor Brian.
Brian has severe migraines. And when he does, he takes these medications and he's absolutely loopy, as we refer to him. And he was unable to perform because he wasn't able to between the migraines and the side effects of the medication. Joe over here understudies not only Wes, but Jackson. He went on as Wes for the first two shows in our workshop production. In turn, I stepped up as the multi-character. The third show was always going to be the understudy role, where Joe was going to step up as Jackson, and Jeremy Bacon, actually understudies Rory, so then Brian was going to play Wes. That was Brian's first actual show. And Joe, the first weekend, didn't get a chance to play the role that he was originally cast in. He understudied. How was that for you, that you had to play two different characters in the first weekend, and not even the one that you worked on the most?
It was one of the most stressful experiences of my entire life. I came into rehearsal that Thursday,
mm-hmm.
that Thursday, and we were doing a full run, a dress run before our opening night.
That was Wednesday when they did the actual full dress run. Thursday was our understudy run.
Wednesday! I came in, we were doing our full dress run before our show. And about 15 minutes before we start our opening number to run the show, Paul tells me, Brian's got migraines, you are going to fill in for Wes tonight, and you might have to go on this weekend. Okay, Paul, whatever you say. So I sprinted backstage, changed costumes, because I had to get out of my skirt into big boy pants. I grabbed Bacon and got him to tell me all of my blocking choreography in those 15 minutes. I learned lines as fast as I could. I called lines so many times that night. By Thursday, I was much more comfortable. By Friday, I actually think I knew the part well enough to perform it. Thank God. And then Saturday was just a lot of fun, because by then I had the part fairly cemented, or at least the lines and blocking and choreography cemented, if not the character itself. And then Sunday was the problem. Because I had spent so much time learning Wes, I didn't take the time to learn Jackson. So Sunday was interesting.
It was quite interesting. But it was what was going to be an understudy show anyway. That was the original plan for that show. And it was kind of funny seeing other people up in different roles. Allie was up playing Kit, Catherine was up playing Haley, you were in as Jackson, Bacon was up, and I was up as the multi-character. And I still say one of the funniest things that happened in that entire show, for that show, was Brian running in and saying, here you go, Kit, and I took out all the green ones. And they were good and plenty.
Brian.
And Allie had the best line to come out with, which was, they're good in plenty, Wes. There are no green ones.
What did you pick out?
It was very, very funny, and I give Allie a lot of credit for that. But that's not the first time that you had to understudy. We touched on it before. You were in Vendune, you were an ensemble member. The day before we opened, one of the young ladies gets hurt. She hurts her foot very badly that she required, I believe it was something along the lines of 20 stitches, some internal, some external. And then you had to go on as Terpsichore, which is one of the Greek goddesses, yes?
The muse of dance.
The muse of dance, you heard me right, the Greek goddess. So this show is not the first time that Joe was in a skirt. Tell me what that was like for you. That at least here with Maude, you knew that you had a chance of going on as Wes or Jackson. You had no clue that you were going to become Terpsichore. Tell me about that.
That was learned in about an hour, which was interesting. Luckily for me, Terpsichore was still one of the smaller parts. There were a couple of solo lines during songs, a couple of lines in scenes that I had to learn, but it wasn't as difficult as it could have been. Oh, poor Erica. I felt so bad.
I felt bad, too. I'm the one who had the bandager. So I got a chance to see it up close and personal. So, but you wound up, you stepped up to the plate again, and you did as well as you could. I will not say that you were the perfect Terpsichore, but for somebody who was turned around and told, like, you know, 12 hours prior, hey, by the way, you're going to have to dress in a skirt. And I think your hair was long enough that you put them up in two ponytails.
I had one ponytail in the back.
One ponytail in the back. And you went on and you did very well considering the circumstances.
Oh, thanks.
Getting back to Maude for a little bit. We're opening on Saturday down in the city. How does that make you feel?
I'm so excited.
You're excited. I know your nerves are on edge for it. But you're excited for this show. Obviously, you are 16 years old. 17 years old. I don't know anybody's age in this show. I want to put it out there. 17 years old. Just started driving after 9.
Just started driving.
Just started driving, period. And you're making your off-Broadway debut. How does that make you feel?
It's terrifying and exhilarating all at the same time.
Yeah. In less than 3 weeks, we are going to Edinburgh. Have you ever been to Scotland, number one?
Not Scotland. I went to Italy last year.
Okay. Besides Italy, have you ever been to Europe? Have you ever left the country? So last year was the first time you've ever left the country.
Yes.
And this is going to be your first time going to Scotland, and you're going to the largest arts festival in the world. And we touched on this in the first Maudcast, that it's exciting for you because you knew what the Fringe was before Maude. Talk to me a little bit more about it. The excitement that you're feeling about being able to perform in the largest arts festival in the world.
I literally never in 1,000 years would have guessed that I would ever be given this kind of opportunity. If this goes as well as it is going to, not as well as I hope it's going to, if it goes as well as it is going to, then this will easily be one of the defining moments of my entire life. If this goes well, I will have a fantastic thing to put on my resume for the rest of my life, and I'm so excited.
Now, you've never been to the Fringe. I want you to, from stories that you've heard from myself and Paul, what do you see in your mind when you think of the festival and High Street and everything? What does Joe Coppola see?
Just lots of people milling around, just being excited, going to see shows. There are people performing. There's food, which I really hope is good. I've heard bad things about the Scottish food. I'm a big food person. This might be a problem.
If you know where to go, the food's actually good. Take it from the fat guy.
Solid.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give you a treat that no other cast member is going to have. And you and I have been joking for the longest time because I, too, have never... This is my second Fringe, but I didn't perform in the last one. It was purely stage and technical director.
Well, when I kill Brian, you'll get to perform in this one.
And when you kill Brian, I'll get to perform. And I've always talked about and joke around. It was pure joking because I cannot hurt a soul about bumping off Joe so I can perform at the Edinburgh Fringe. So as my treat to you for enduring all this joke, we are actually going to switch seats. And since everybody has always told me that I am a member of this cast, I'm giving you the pure pleasure of interviewing me for our shared modcast, just like we share the multi-character. So, from a countdown of five, you will begin the second half of this modcast. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Infinity Repertoire Theater Company's Modcast. Today, I'm your host, Joe Coppola. Tomorrow, I won't be your host, Joe Coppola. We are here with the beautiful and talented Mickey Melillo, who is understudying the even more beautiful and talented me.
Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. So, Mickey, you are the stage manager of MOD. Tell me about being stage manager. Tell me about what it's like being the only crew member.
Being the stage manager for MOD actually is an experience all in itself. It's almost our friend and babysitter, for lack of better terms, at the same time. You have to care about your actors and care about their well-being, as well as make sure that you're a disciplinarian to them. There are times that I have to scream and yell at the cast, get them to quiet down, to pay attention to everything, and it hurts me to do so, but it's only so that they can better themselves on stage so that they don't go on stage in Edinburgh or the city and not being at their full potential. In the same token, what I love about this cast, you included, that you know, during rehearsal time and show time, I am very serious, but on the outside, I am still your friend. So that's one thing I love about you guys. The other tough part about being the stage manager for this is that and the only crew is that you have to know the show inside and out. Almost have to know every line. Not memorize, but know where they come. And know when the music goes. Know when the sound effects go. Know when the lighting is going to change and stuff like that. That's what a stage manager is ultimately like for MOD.
I think my favorite memory of you as our MOD stage manager was we had a long day of rehearsal. We got a lot of negative notes from Paul. And we were all just feeling very down on ourselves. Paul stepped out for one reason or another, I don't remember. And Mickey gathered us all together and gave us a pep talk, gave us a little bit more positive encouragement. And I feel like it really did help. So thank you for that.
I'm very happy about that. I know as an actor how hard it can be sometimes when you get a lot of negative things. And I know Paul was saying things for you guys to fix it. And I felt you guys needed a little pick-me-up. And I did everything that I said in that huddle is true. Pep talks were always my thing. I was a football coach, and I brought it into my acting and my stage managing. And I really wanted you guys to feel that you were worthy, that you were there. You just needed to have the confidence. And I felt like that was something you guys were lacking for a little bit. So I am happy that you guys picked up from that moment and knew that you could do it. And I'm very happy that it actually did help. So thank you for the compliment.
Anytime. Now, moving on to the role, even though you're in the understudy, I'm going to say it's your role too. Your role as the multi-character. Which one of your six characters is your favorite?
I would have to say, it's almost a tie between Wooler and Krychek. I like Krychek almost for the same reasons that you do. He's very physical, he's very over the top, he's very out there and boisterous and everything. In the same token, you go from Krychek to Wooler, who's almost the absolute opposite. As they're both comedic characters, he's on stage for a total of 4 minutes. But he's memorable because of what you do with him, what we do with him. And I love it because when I first had to do that opening show, I had no idea what I was doing with Wooler. And the accent that we do now came out by accident.
and I kept it. And it wound up being a staple for Mr. Wooler. And I'm not going to go into it because I don't want people to...
Come see Mod.
Yeah, come see Mod. It sold out in New York City, so fly to Edinburgh. But those are my two favorite. I mean, I really love Cry Check. And even I'm watching you, what you do now, and looking and going, wow, he's been working. He's been doing good. He's doing stuff that I would never have thought about doing. So now I have to emulate you, almost like how I wanted you to emulate me back in the workshop production. So it's how roles have reversed a little bit.
Once again.
Once again.
Okay, now we talked about my past a little bit, so let's talk about yours. My knowledge of your past career as an actor and as a human being is limited at best. I think the only acting roles I know you've had other than Vernon and any others that I've seen, Mr. Gray in our production of Rent,
yes,
was when you did your production of Footloose. I think you should tell everyone about that.
10 years ago, when I first met Paul, it was at the old NWCA. I auditioned for Footloose. It was my first show post 9/11, and I was a responder to 9/11. I'm an EMT. I've been an EMT since 1997. I was doing Footloose, and I was originally cast as just the coach and the uncle. Strictly, I wasn't a major singer or anything at the time. Like you, I was more concentrating on acting than I was singing, even though I could sing and I could hold a tune. I wound up getting cast in that show as Travis, who is one of Chuck's friends who sings The Girl Gets Around, who sings the high harmony in The Girl Gets Around. I was also cast as a cowboy in the barbecue for Latier for the Boy. And then, because of the lack of guys in the show, I was cast as, I forgot which boy it was, but one of the Mama Says boys, one of Willard's friends at the end. So I went from bad to good by the end of the show. What I loved about that show is that Mike Ficicelli was the musical director, and he wound up breaking me out of my singing shell. And we were rehearsing for The Girl Gets Around, and he goes, "Okay, Mickey, I want you to sing the higher harmony." And he goes, "Just sing it in your falsetto." And I did, and I would hit all the notes. And he goes, "You've got something." He goes, "I don't know what it is, but you got something." Back then, we had cassettes. No digital recorders or anything like that.
How sad.
Yes, very sad. And I recorded the harmony, and I used to sing it in my car on the way home from Mount Kisco to New Rochelle. A few rehearsals later, next time we did The Girl Gets Around, afterwards, I said, "Can I try something?" And I sang it full voice for him. He hit his keyboard after about 3 bars and said, "I knew you had something." And I wound up, that's when I first found out that I was a tenor. That show was wonderful. It was one of the shows where I was my first multi-character. And with it, the joke was that they always wondered who I was coming out as next, the audience. And the director came up to me after the dress rehearsal and said, "You know, I'm kind of glad you're feeling better, because I didn't feel good earlier that week, because I wouldn't know what to do if you got sick and couldn't do the show. We wouldn't know what to do. You play so many different things and we don't have an understudy for you." So that is Footloose. That was me in Footloose.
Now moving on to the elephant in the room. Melanie. Melanie, for anyone who doesn't know, is the first character that the multi-character role plays. She is one of the schoolgirls in the opening number. She is the girl who is in love with Ringo. Unfortunately, when Mickey is filling in as the multi-character, he isn't. Melanie is played by one of the girls, one of our girl cast members, and not Mickey. So tell us about that.
Well, Paul and I spoke about it, and it wasn't the fact that he didn't think that I would do well at it, but it would turn around that he felt that the scenes that I would play in a schoolgirl outfit would, A, look like I was pregnant, because, well, I'm a rotund man. But
big boned, Mickey. You're big boned.
I like rotund. But it was also due to the fact that the scene would then become me in a skirt and not me playing a schoolgirl. So Paul felt that it was better if I didn't play Melanie. And looking back and on it now, I agree with him, but at first I was a little upset. Because not that I wanted to wear a skirt, but I just thought it was, you know, be something different. I've never actually gone out and tried to portray a female on stage before, but that's Paul's reasoning, and I agree with him 100%.
Which is really too bad, because I'm sure we would all love to see you in a skirt, Mickey.
Oh, Steve Loftus was advocating it, like you wouldn't believe during the Saturday classes to Paul. Please, come on, just tell me Mickey's going to look like a schoolgirl. Please, let him put on that wig. I really want to see him in that. But unfortunately, no, I do not put on anything that resembles a skirt in the show other than the nun's habit.
Which is a beautiful segue. Although you don't get to play Melanie, you do get to play Sister Ed.
Yes.
So if that's your first female role, it wasn't mine, but if it was your first female role, tell me what it's like to play a girl.
It's really odd for two reasons. One, I am a Catholic. So trying to emulate one of the... I didn't go to Catholic school, but trying to emulate one of the nuns from my religion classes is... It was kind of hard because I'm trying to go back and remember it. But it's kind of odd because, you know, I'm trying to go with the stereotypical 60s, I'm going to slap your hand with a ruler type of nun. If it wasn't for Paul's direction and while he was telling you on how nuns were in Catholic school, I don't think I could have played that role to the best I could have, because I don't know. I wasn't a Catholic school boy. I only got to see a nun once a week. And the one memory I have of a nun in religious studies was I asked her what time it was, and I got chastised like you wouldn't believe, and I was in third grade at the time. But she just yelled at me, "Young man, you should not ask what time it is. It is rude." I just wanted to get out of there so I could go play. That was the reason. But that was, playing Sister Ed is, it's very odd. I'm just glad I get to wear pants underneath the habit that I don't have to have my legs showing. Sister Ed, it's a fun role. It's another one of those roles. It's very comedic, but it's not because of what you're saying, but how you're saying it. So it's a very fun role.
Very, very true. Well, Mickey, thank you for allowing me the privilege of being host for half of a modcast. It was a lot of fun.
Well, Joe, thank you for letting me be here and hosting me for the modcast. So we'll switch seats now, Joe. And now that we're back in our own seats, don't worry, I won't put on the theme music again. It has been an absolute pleasure to sit here with you today.
As it always is.
Yes, it always is. I'm going to ask one more question before we close the show. What is the one thing you are looking forward to seeing in Edinburgh?
Battle Ducks activate!
Battle Ducks... Wait, I haven't heard this show yet. Most of the cast has talked about Without You by Anthony Rapp's one-man show. We've heard Access of Awesome. I think the new one's called Fork, which is a four-person a cappella. What is Battle Ducks Activate? Because if it's good and it sounds stimulating and funny, I may actually go see it with you. So Battle Ducks Activate, go.
Battle Ducks Activate is a show that Liliana chanced upon while we were flipping through the book of all the shows that are being performed at the Fringe. We were really just looking for shows that had funny titles that we thought would be wacky and out there and fun to go watch. And we found Battle Ducks Activate, which was our runner-up. Our original plan was to go see My Banjo's Name is Steven. Unfortunately, that ended up being 18+.
Oh.
So I couldn't tell you what Battle Ducks Activate is about or when it's playing or anything. I just know that me and Liliana are going to go see it, and it's going to be fantastic.
Battle Ducks Activate. Sounds like a cartoon that I used to watch when I was a kid. But Battle Ducks Activate. Now, on a serious note, though, is there any show that you got a chance to see that you, in the program, that you want to see, that you know of?
Not really. I haven't looked through the program that much. My plan is to just go and take it as it comes. If I pass by someone handing out flyers for a show that looks good, maybe I'll be one of those people that actually goes because of that flyer.
Okay. Well, Joe, thank you very much for sitting here and hosting me on my modcast. If you want more information about Mod, please go to our website, modmusical.com. Next time, we'll be speaking with one of the young ladies who's playing the role of Cassandra, Miss Catherine Saraceno. See you next time. Thank you.
That'll be produced in New York City at the 59 East 59th Street Theater's East Edinburgh Festival on July 21st and 22nd, as well as July 26th through 29th. All shows are at 7 p.m. For ticketing information, please go to 59e59.org. In Edinburgh, Scotland, Mon will be produced at venue number 50 CECA at the Edinburgh College of Art at Lady Lawson and Laurelston Place. Mon will be produced every night from August 3rd to August 19th at 8:15 p.m. For ticketing information, please go to www.edfringe.com. For more information about the show, cast, and crew, please go to moddemusical.com.